Rebel Force Radio is brought to you in part by Little Debbie Snacks, bakers of all galactic goodness, like mini donuts, Star Crunch, cosmic cupcakes, cosmic brownies, nutty bars, and much more. Little Debbie, official snack of Rebel Force Radio and fans around the galaxy. From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, Star Wars Card Trader. For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, all from the comfort of your mobile device. Star Wars Card Trader. These are the cards you're looking for.
Let's get it, Star Wars! Let's get it, Star Wars, in here! Let's get it, Star Wars! Let's get it, Star Wars, in here!
A small rebel force has penetrated the shield and landed on Endor.
This is where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Well, how did that San Diego Comic-Con exclusive on sale treat you? I can tell you how it treated me. Zip. Zero. Zilch. And I was all prepared to make this my big moment, my big rant and tirade, and say, I'm out, I'm done. I'm not collecting this stuff anymore. And then the Rogue One trailer hits and just kind of blew it all away. That's really the top story. Not my grievances against Hasbro. The Hasbro toy shop. If we have time, I'll get to it. I know some of you out there, that I don't want to talk about collecting. I don't talk about collecting. I want to hear about Rogue One, and that's what we want to talk about. The big trailer here on Rebel Force Radio this week for August 12th, 2016. Grateful to have you with us. So great to be with you all as we sort of come down from the big premiere of what I thought was just going to be the same trailer that everybody saw at Star Wars Celebration, or at least not everybody, but the people that happened to be in the room at the time of the big panel. But that was not the case. We got a brand new trailer, and of course here to dissect it with me, as always, my good friend and yours from Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Yes, nothing like when a new Star Wars trailer drops. And it was a lot of fun last night waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for that trailer to drop on NBC during their Olympic coverage. But when it did, it was pretty impressive. And Jason, a lot of people were speculating that it would be the same brief trailer that they screened in Europe at Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah.
But leave it to marketing. They created a trailer for this trailer. And all week on NBC, this was being teased starting on Sunday. So right at the beginning of the week, it started getting teased. And they did have that one line of dialogue from Jyn that was, "Are you with me?" And that was not featured in the Europe trailer. So I knew we were going to get something different.
But you know, I noticed that too, but I still thought that, you know, these things don't come cheap and there's a lot of decision making that's involved. And, you know, we're still several months away from the film. I just didn't think, I mean, this is now the third trailer that we've seen. And but then again, you know, I did feel that because that trailer that was shown at Celebration was never released widely, that they didn't want it to be released widely. I don't think we're ever going to see that trailer, quite honestly. But we'll break it all down and we'll sort of talk about the differences between what we have seen along this incredible journey of bringing the first standalone Star Wars feature film to the big screen. But Jim, you and I were not in it alone this week.
No, Jason. As a matter of fact, we brought on a very special guest. She's someone I've been wanting to have on the show for a long time. Savannah Kiefer, a.k.a. the Dorky Diva from thedorkydiva.com. How's it going, Savannah?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm so excited.
Well, it's long overdue. We've known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you are, if I could sum you up, you are a member of the 501st Florida Garrison.
Mm-hmm.
You are someone who has dabbled in podcasting in the past, Star Wars podcasting. You're a regular staple at large conventions like Star Wars Celebration.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think is really cool about you, Savannah, is that you are a fangirl photographer extraordinaire.
I like that description. I really do.
And even better yet, you're someone I consider to be a protege of Joel Aaron,
the
visual
even
effects.
Better.
Yes. So real quickly, what got you into photography? How do you incorporate Star Wars into your photographs? And where are you going to take your talent?
Well, I started out taking photos just for fun. I collected dolls way back in the day when I was very little, and I would take pictures of them and set them up and make like sets and backgrounds for them. And so that's kind of how it started.
Wait, dolls or action figures?
Like American Girl dolls, like totally right. girly dolls. Oh, okay. And then,
Frank's familiar with all
right.
of
it. Right. And then the Clone Wars came out, and I got really into Star Wars, and I've grown up in a family that has loved Star Wars like all my life. So I've been around it, but when the Clone Wars came out, I got really into all the characters, and I started collecting the action figures, and so I would take pictures of the little action figures and set them up, and it just kind of transformed from that into taking pictures of cosplayers, because I'm involved with the 501st. And it's just been a really fun journey. And I love going to conventions now and taking pictures of just really candid moments between people and costumes at Celebration, because that's like the biggest place to show off your amazing Star Wars costume is, you know, Celebration. So that's been really fun for me. And I'm not sure where it's going to go in the future. I decided to change my school major in college from photography to PR. So I'm actually minoring in photography. So it's kind of on the back burner a little bit, but it's been really fun. And I've been getting more involved in photography with my blog and taking pictures for the Dorky Diva. So it's been super fun.
And you can incorporate photography into PR work.
Oh, absolutely.
Things of that nature. So it'll all work for you in the end.
Yeah.
How did you come to know of a guy, a talent like Joel Aaron? And wasn't it Celebration when you first connected with him?
Yeah, I think I had first reached out to him online because I knew he was like an incredible photographer and I really, really admired his work. And then I finally got to meet him in person at Celebration 6. And he had a panel there about photography and how it relates to Star Wars with lighting and his work on Clone Wars and now Rebels. So I got to know him through that. And then at that panel afterwards, he actually gave me a film camera that was his. And after that, we kept in touch via Facebook, and he sort of mentored me on how to use the camera and develop my own film and really have an eye for light and details and photos. So he's kind of shaped me in a way through my photography, and I really owe everything I've done to him because he mentored me so much in my early years of getting comfortable with cameras.
Are you his Padawan?
I would like to say so. Right. I really admire him, so I would like to say that.
Well, Joe's a great guy, and we've known him for a long time, and he has actually used us as subjects, Jason. He has shot us.
Yeah.
I believe he just always
with a
wants
camera.
To With a camera.
Yeah,
he had probably a harpoon gun, but he had a camera. And those photos ended up in Star Wars Insider. And I just remember him coaching us, saying, just look really intense. Just be intense. He wanted our eyes to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think he got the crazy eyes from me, but you know.
I begged him for years to take my portrait, and we finally got together last year at Celebration Anaheim, and he took some portraits of me, and it was like a dream come true. I had to hold it together because inside I was like, oh my God, Joel Aaron is taking my portrait. Like, this is such a big deal. But on the outside, I had to be super cool, so I didn't look like a freak in these pictures, but I think it all worked out.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah. Camera loves you, girl.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know what? Let's, now that we've gotten acquainted, let's get into this Rogue One trailer. What do you say, Savannah? You want to join us? We're going to break it all down, shot by shot. Were you watching NBC last night, sitting through the Olympic cover? So you were, and started.
It was painful. I was like, how long are they going to drag this out?
It took forever. When the story broke. By the way, I want to give a special shout out to longtime Rebel Force Radio listener and a good friend of ours, Adam Giffey. And Adam, who is a native Clevelander that actually now lives in your neck of the woods, Jim. He's living in Chicago with his wife as she goes to school out there. But Adam was the one that sent us the video that he took on his phone of the trailer for the trailer, right? The teaser for the trailer. And so I put it on our Facebook page. It actually ended up getting up on Entertainment Weekly's website. So that was sort of the lead graphic for their story was Adam's video. And those of you who saw it, remember the cat meowing at one point. And so that was so good on Adam for having his phone handy so he could get that for us. So that was when I realized that we were going to get a trailer. And the story was that it would debut during NBC's Rio Olympics coverage on Thursday. I think a lot of other people assumed that this would happen probably between 8 and 9:30, maybe at the latest, Eastern time. That was not to be. And I kept thinking that I missed it, and I was, on social media just making sure that, because I don't have a DVR or anything like that. I literally have, the HD equivalent of bunny ears, this big, long coaxial cable, and I have to get up on the ceiling because we're cord cutters. So I had no way of knowing as I'm going about, life for the for a couple hours, making sure that I hadn't missed it. And then, Jim, I found out that you didn't have power.
Oh, I know.
So I didn't even have you to let me know if I missed it.
Yeah, you did give me the head. You said, give me the heads up when the trailer drops. And, of course, I would have had the Olympics on just like Savannah and a lot of people listening. But we did lose our power at about 6 o'clock, and it was out all over the place. And so I was sitting in the dark following Twitter on my phone once the Olympic coverage kicked in during prime time. And it was one of the funniest evenings I've had monitoring Twitter, because every commercial break, so many people were having just complete meltdowns. Where are they going to show it? Where is it? And, people put up, so far, every commercial has not been the Rogue One trailer. I mean, Twitter angst. Fanboy angst on Twitter, just going crazy. Collider News posted up a picture as the minutes ticked on and turned into hours. Collider News posted up trying to get in touch with yourself while you wait for the Rogue One trailer. Like, and then there's pictures of Kermit the Frog sitting there looking off in contemplation off toward the distance. A lot of funny GIFs out there, like SpongeBob slamming Patrick's head into the to the sand, I can't wait any longer, Milhouse from The Simpsons beating up a TV, stuff like that. Somebody put on Twitter, dear Rogue One trailer, get here, come on, I got a life to live.
That's how I felt, yeah.
Sincerely, Mark, P.S., sorry I yelled. PPX, show Vader. My favorite one. I saw a few different variations of this along the way. But, earlier in the week, Michael Phelps, of course, superstar U.S. swimmer Michael Phelps, prior to his first race in the 2016 Olympics, he had this big stare down with one of his competitors. And it's been all over the place. He's wearing a hood. He's wearing his U.S. athletes gear, and it's got a hood, and he's got the hood pulled up, and he's just got this intense look. So a lot of people have been drawing comparisons to Anakin Skywalker when he starts really going to the dark side in Revenge of the Sith. And, they put up the comparisons, and I've seen people superimpose other faces into the Michael Phelps hoodie. And
that's what we call a meme. That's what the kids call it.
That's what they call a meme. And somebody put up waiting for the Rogue One trailer, like, and then there's a picture of Michael Phelps with that insanely intense look on his face. And then here's one you'll like, Jason.
Yeah.
Yak Face, our buddy's Yak Face posted up on Twitter. Who's distributing this trailer? Hasbro? So I hit in the fray. I had to jump in the fray with the Rebel Force Radio Twitter account, and I wrote, this just in, Rogue One trailer delayed due to reshoots.
Oh.
Oh.
Too soon, Jimmy Mac. Too soon.
Yeah. Is it?
No, because I think those reshoots are in the trailer. But
we are definitely seeing evidence of some of the softening up of the content of Rogue One to lessen the intense impact the gritty war film is going to have. We don't deny that Rogue One is going to be a war film. It's a Star Wars film. Wars. But the gritty part is always the thing that's made us a little nervous, because how far are you going to want to push the boundaries at this point? So we'll get into that a little bit later. But you know what? We have the trailer queued up.
We do.
And I think, Jason, you're going to walk us through shot by shot. Savannah, if you want, you can pull up the trailer on YouTube or wherever and follow along with us. We'll be starting and stopping along the way. So keep your cursor over that pause button. She's ready to rock.
All right, we'll try to do this.
No sound though, Savannah. Jason, you play sound though. Okay?
Yeah, I've got a little. It's light. Let's see. Here we go. So Rogue One, I've got it run all the way back. Let's give it a whirl here. And we see the city, fortress of. And I'm pausing here. This is Jeddah. I think we're pronouncing that right. Jeddah.
Yeah.
And Gareth Edwards fairly recently confirmed that this was once home to Force users. This is a planet that has a history with the Force. There's something mystical about it. And then Donnie Yen, who's a character in it, he said that it's home of the Kyber crystals.
We have audio of that, actually.
Oh, we do? Okay, all right.
So, I mean, hey, just go ahead and fire it off. Right, I'd rather hear this from Donnie and not you.
Right. Well, I didn't know we had to. I don't know what we've got. So we have it on the soundbite. Here we go. So Donnie Yen revealing what's so special about Jeddah.
He's a blind warrior. Lives in the planet of Jeddah. Jeddah is the planet where they have these resources to build and make a lightsaber.
Oh, wow.
And he is a true believer in the spiritual force. He gets to say all these cool lines. He can't see, but he can feel it with his heart. That's the closest thing. That's the coolest thing. Closest to being a real Jedi.
Mm-hmm. So Jedi, I'm starting to feel a theme here, and the Kyber crystals. Now, canonically, if we're just looking at, that's not true. We did see Ilum, didn't we? Did we? Mm-hmm. We saw Ilum in the Clone Wars in that final season, the sixth season,
which is still deemed to be canon.
Exactly.
And so also, as long as we're just, you know, talking in this, you know, broad terms about the planet Jeddah, something I do want to note is there's been this trend with the Star Wars storytelling about these Kyber crystals. We saw it starting to rear its head in Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. And then there was that episode that was only released as an animatic, Crystal Crisis on Utapau? Was it on Utapau?
Oh, yeah, it was on Utapau.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Savannah. And so the crystal thing keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And remember when we were talking about the new book, Life Debt, last week? There is that moment toward the end of the book, at the end of the book, where it's revealed that Palpatine has had some sort of excavating operation going on the planet Jakku. Could this also be a source of Kyber crystals? I think there are many places throughout. Maybe I'm wrong, and that diminishes the significance of the planet Jeddah. But I don't know. It's all kind of.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking if I have the choice between going to Jeddah for my Kyber crystal or freezing my butt off on Ilum, I think I'm going to Jeddah, or I'm going to go to Jakku. So I hope that this isn't, you know, like I don't know. On our planet, you know, as common as coal or, you know, I don't know. I hope we're not dealing with three systems that we've seen already that, you know, you got Kyber crystals growing all over the place.
Yeah.
But to your point, though, Jim, I mean, we know that, or what we believe to be groundwork, the groundwork that is laying or is being laid here is that not only do the kyber crystals fuel and power lightsabers, but they might also be used en masse to actually power the Death Star laser.
That is what's being speculated, yeah, because the raw material is probably exactly right. You know, the thing that magnifies the laser beams. So this keeps popping up lately. You know, they keep going to this well with the kyber crystals,
mm-hmm,
and everything. So it's going to be fun to see how it all sort of ties together. So let's get back into the trailer. We made it through, what, 4 seconds? So,
well, yeah, right. But I mean, this stuff's going to come off or come up. And we've got another planet here we'll be talking about in just a moment. Okay, so what do we see here? We see Jyn Erso and a voiceover from Saw Gerrera, played by Forrest Whitaker. A conversation here.
The world is coming undone. Imperial flags reign across the galaxy.
And a really chilling shot of a Star Destroyer in atmosphere above this mountain formation on Jeddah. And so this is a clear shot of Forrest Whitaker as Saw Gerrera, but with hair, right? Again, yep, we're dealing with a Saw with hair, so I don't know if this is something that he's going to change in the film, or if this is part of the reshoots, is giving him a different look, perhaps to kind of bring him closer to Clone Wars. I don't know. He had short hair in the Clone Wars, so
Forrest Whitaker did reveal to Bresnikan in Entertainment Weekly that you'll see the shaved head and
both looks.
And there's a purpose for that.
Okay.
So maybe we see him at the beginning of the film and then he takes off and comes back later. And it's like, where have you been? Wow, you haven't shaved your head for a while. So
barbershop. You
know, now the thing about this mountain, it's clearly a man-made fortress that the Star Destroyer is hovering over. So it must be maybe, I'm thinking it's an Imperial compound of some sort. Looks like some shuttles are flying around it and everything. And there's definitely a man-made structure up on top of it.
It looks so real, though. Like, it looks like you could just see this in Colorado with, like, the Star Destroyer above it.
Right, it's like Devil's Head Tower.
Yeah.
But let me throw this out there. Because, you know, the Imperials, you know, they're dealing in machinery and metal. And this looks very organic. Could this be the mine? Could this be an ancient Jedi mine where you were, or a temple of some sort, perhaps,
mm-hmm,
where these kyber crystals might have been, you know, harvested. It just seems a little too earthy, or
yeah, you know, it's too natural.
It's too natural. That's the word. Yeah, for this to be maybe an Imperial thing, but it's definitely being occupied, as we see. You know, the Imperials that have a pretty heavy presence over this. So and you might not have heard, but Guerrero's quote there is, the world is coming undone. Imperial flags reign across the galaxy. And, of course, you know, the Empire has always been likened to Nazi Germany and imperialism and all of that. And I think that's really going to become more and more that comparison, I think, has become more and more apparent as we see this unfold. What's interesting, guys, I'll just throw this out, is some of these shots, and we'll see these of occupied worlds, seem a little less, I don't want to say they're less dramatic, that's not what I'm trying to say. I think had we not seen Rebels, and had we not seen Clone Wars, these would really seem more dramatic. But we've kind of already seen this side of the Empire, this incredible force that occupies these worlds and makes slaves or you know, out of the local inhabitants. So we've seen this, but now we're seeing it in a film, obviously.
And a lot of people are also drawing comparisons to some of these visuals in this trailer to some of the things they see in Star Wars Battlefront, the video game. You know, I mean, how far as video games come where people are, you know, but I mean, I see what they're saying.
Sure.
I definitely see what they're saying.
Well, that was always George's vision, right? George's vision was that the video games, the folks creating the video games, the folks creating the movies are basically doing the same thing. And he saw a world when they would be really indistinguishable from each other. And so I think we're definitely getting closer to that. Okay, back to the tape. what do we got? Lucasfilm logo.
Can you be trusted without your shackles?
Let's just get this over with, shall we?
All right, so we hear, do we know who that is that says, no. Can you be trusted? I don't think we've seen him before.
His character has not yet been named.
Yes, but, you know, what's also kind of interesting, too, is that if you've been watching, of course, all of these trailers, you're starting to be able to piece some things together. So, you know, in I think it was the first trailer, it's Mon Mothma, I believe it's, you know, reading this whole caseload against Jyn Erso of what, mm-hmm. you know, the crimes that she may have committed. And now we see Diego Luna's character, Cassian Andor, what looks to be literally taking the shackles off of her as she's being chosen to lead this mission. We can assume that.
Yeah.
So let me ask, since we haven't had a chance to talk to Savannah before, what do you make of the Jyn Erso character? How do you feel about what you're seeing so far and how this character is starting to shape up?
I already love all of it, and I really trust Disney and Lucasfilm with these female leads just because of the way they treated Rey's character, and I think so many girls and little boys look up to Rey. I'm excited to see how people react to Jyn. Mm-hmm. And I know some people have said, well, why are they doing another female lead? You know, they've already done that. But I think we need more females involved with Star Wars, especially in leadership roles. So I think it's neat to see that Jyn is like, you know, obviously she's committed some crime. She's been through a lot, but they've chosen her to take charge of the situation. And I've never seen Felicity Jones in anything before. So I'm kind of going into this fresh. I don't know what to expect from her, but from the trailers, it seems like she's a very good actress and she knows the part very well. So I'm excited to see that, but I'm just kind of being open to everything,
but
I'm just really glad that they're choosing another woman to be the lead, because to me, you know, I grew up loving Star Wars and I pretty much only had like Princess Leia and Queen Amidala to look up to, but there weren't a ton of girl characters that really got, you know, down and dirty and were like in the heat of the battle all the time.
I don't know.
And
Ula tried to take on Jabba.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No, there's no love for Ula. I mean, she was fighting back. I mean, she didn't succeed, but she was fighting
poor
back
girl.
Against. I know.
And, bless her heart.
and the three-breasted woman. What's her name? Yarna.
That girl.
Yarna. Yeah.
Six-breasted.
What? Six-breasted.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. There's like
I lost
three
count.
Don't cheat her. Don't play her small.
No, you're right, and I already I think we're seeing a you know, a contrast between obviously we're going to be comparing Jyn to Rey. I mean, they both look to be similar in age. They have a similar look in the face. I think there's a lot to sort of compare, but also, you know, right now what we're seeing of these characters is there's a definite. I think Rey is like the girl that you bring home to mom, and you know, and Jyn is maybe your favorite mistake. We'll see. Okay, so back to the video here.
A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know how to destroy it.
All right, Mon Mothma, we have a mission for you. I was really hoping that in this some of these new shots, we might see more of Jimmy Smits, which, by the way. Jim, I'm sure you know that has been confirmed. Jimmy Smits. Yeah. We speculated after the last trailer,
and we have audio of Jimmy Smits confirming that from the talk. He showed up on the talk, and much like with Donnie Yen, I'd rather hear him speak than you. Play the tape.
Before we get going, we want to clear up a little rumor that's going around. Last month, fans of Star Wars dissected a new sizzle reel that's out for the upcoming film Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And a lot of fans out there are convinced that they spotted you in this trailer reprising your role as Senator Bail Organa. What can you tell us?
No.
Is that you?
Who is that then?
People got nothing better to do than to look at this picture.
Yeah, they really do.
There's stuff going on in the
world.
No, we don't, sir.
No.
We have nothing better.
You can't tell us. You can neither confirm nor deny. I think. No.
Can you say the word cameo? Can you say the word small part?
Yes, I can.
Continue.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Well, I guess that's a confirmation.
Of what? That he has a small part?
That he...
I don't like what they were laughing about, that small part business on the talk, but what do you expect? I should say, though, that they did show the freeze frame from that sizzle reel where we identified Jimmy Smits 4 weeks ago, and they showed that. So, I mean, talk about putting a guy on the spot.
Yeah,
you can't deny that.
Well, no, he can't. And clearly, if they were trying to keep this a secret, they should not have, obviously we've seen now three trailers, if you count the Celebration exclusive trailer. And, he only showed up in that sizzle reel. There's a lot of thought that went into that sizzle reel. But, and they know we're going to be pausing this stuff and blowing it up. And that's all part of the fun.
Did Smits almost call us out in a get a life moment right there? I think he did.
Savannah, what do you think?
Did he call us out? Is that what you're asking?
Well, let's go back to the clip here. I don't know. There's just a little bit of condescension.
Before we get going, we want to clear up a little rumor that's going around. Last month, fans of Star Wars dissected a new sizzle reel that's out for the upcoming film Rogue One, a Star Wars story. And a lot of fans out there are convinced that they spotted you in this trailer reprising your role as Senator Bail Organa. What can you tell us?
No.
Is that you?
Who is that then?
People got nothing better to do than look at this.
No.
I think in that situation, there's not much you can say. So I'm okay with him poking a little fun at people who do that. I'm not one of those people who, like, pause. Well, other than this moment right now.
I was going to say, what the heck are you doing here?
I'm typically not the person to go through and, like, pause every single shot of a trailer or a teaser. Mm-hmm. I just kind of soak it up as a whole. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he was really put on the spot there. So what else is he going to say?
Now, see, that really surprised me. As someone with the eye of a photographer, that you wouldn't be visually dissecting all of this stuff.
Some shots catch my eye, and some shots I dwell on if they catch my eye.
Okay.
The Force Awakens trailers really did that for me. But as a whole, I don't really go through and pause things and capture each second of the trailer. I just sort of go through it, and if some things catch my eye, I'll go back to them, and then I sort of dwell on those frames.
All right. Well, I want to hear what you're dwelling on when we get through all this. So, what stuck out to you? All right. So, back to the day. Okay. So, we're going to take this in very small bites. The visual here is this really, really stunning shot of a Star Destroyer coming out of what we might assume is the shadow of the Death Star. Really stunning shot. And Mon Mothma talking about a major weapons test is imminent. We need to know how to destroy it. So this gives us a sense, guys, of where we are in terms of the development of the Death Star. We're in testing mode. This thing is not still under construction as far as we can tell, though we have seen shots of that big dish being installed. But it sounds like, based on what we're hearing Mothma talk about, is that this thing's
operational.
It is, but has it been tuned enough to where it can pack the wallop, the planet destroying wallop that we know it has? Hmm. We'll just have to wait and see for the movie. I am leaning towards the fact that they are at least juicing it up to see what kind of power it can generate. But we know, obviously, that the first real demonstration of the firepower was the planet Alderaan. That's set in stone.
Yes, yes. That's a really good point. So maybe we might speculate that they disrupt the test in this film.
Mm.
So we don't know. And we also, I guess, shouldn't necessarily assume that the weapons test is happening on the Death Star itself. Could could that technology that's done on a large scale on the Death Star be tested, you know, perhaps on the planet of Jeddah or maybe on the other world that we see?
It's like when they test atomic weaponry underground.
Right, right. Exactly. But boy, I mean, visually speaking, this stuff is just knocking me out, seeing these ships. Now, I felt like, and this could be really picking nits, and maybe Paul Bateman would lend some of, some of his expertise, but I just feel like there's a clarity and a brightness to some of these models that we're seeing. And I know that these are probably done on, I'm assuming that these are done on computer, though we don't know. I don't know if they're, if these are,
I believe the Star Destroyer is a model. I'm staring at it, and just from terms of lighting and all the greeblies all over it and everything, I
there are really, a lot of fine details.
A lot of fine details. And it just looks very pieced together like a model would be.
It just seems very, I'm not used to seeing this era of Star Wars, which we so associate with sort of that 1970s look in sort of this really, really bright, I don't know, it just seems very bright to me.
And the high definition.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so back to the tape here as the Star Destroyer emerges. We have to destroy it. There's the dish going back. You're really doing this. I want to help. Now that's Cassian, and so you know, perhaps we can assume here that is this could this be a solo mission that they put Jyn on, and Cassian kind of throws himself at her and says, "I want a part of this. I want to be a, you know, I want to help out," which he says, and then they go off and assemble a team. I may be getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but
no, I think you're right on. I believe we do see their movement snowball. So it starts with Jyn and Cassian, and then they start picking up other pieces, other cogs in the wheel, like Baze and Shirit, and you know, obviously, I think the droid comes with Cassian, if I'm not mistaken. You know, it's kind of funny. I want to know all about this movie, yet I don't want to know anything about this movie. So I read everything, but sometimes it's incredible how I will fail to commit it to my memory because I want to wipe it clean so I'm ready on December 16th. But it's hard to do when we're talking into a microphone every week and picking apart trailers the way we are.
Right, right.
So
you want to be like 3PO after Revenge of the Sith.
Just wipe your mind.
Just wipe it.
Yeah, that'd be nice if they could offer that service right before you walk into the theater. Just remove all spoilers, please.
Right.
Okay.
Just call the Men in Black and they'll take care of it.
Men in Black. You look at that pen thing.
Yeah.
Harry Potter could have a spell like spoilerous interruptus.
So we see Jyn getting into the U-wing, I believe. This is the U-wing, right?
Yes,
it's lifting,
I think so,
off here. You know, one might suggest if we look at the team that ends up getting assembled, Cassian appears to be the only one that seems to have any kind of larger role in the Alliance. Jyn is essentially an unknown. It seems to me, guys, like maybe they're looking for some, you know, what was that movie? The Expendables? Are these the Expendables with the exception of Andor? Maybe. Mm.
I want to help.
Good.
Good.
Now we're starting to see a little banter at this point. And I would just bring out that I think when we talk about tone, I think this is really the first little bit of humor that we're starting to see, or lightness or repartee between characters, and this is the first glimpse of it. We see a little bit more of it later on in the trailer.
Hey, Savannah, have we considered anything like maybe a romance between Jin and Cassian or Jin and someone else?
See, I just thought about that and I was like, oh, they'd be kind of cute together. But I'm not the kind of person that's like, oh, every person in every movie needs to have somebody with them romantically.
You're not a shipper?
I'm not a shipper. When it comes to the movies, I'm not a shipper. If you sit me down and I'm watching Rebels or something or Clone Wars, I'm all about shipping those characters. I don't know why. Maybe because they're drawn cutesy and I don't know. There's like something about animated characters that makes me want to ship them. But in the movies, I'm like, no, they need to be independent. Like with Rey, I don't want her to end up with anybody. I'm like, she needs to be by herself and strong and all these things. But it would be interesting to see maybe like a little bit of flirtation between Jin and Cassian, but I'm not 100% on board with like fully shipping them yet.
Okay, well, we'll have to see if that chemistry continues to develop. Now, here's an interesting shot. In Jim, you saw on Twitter a comparison of this, what we think is the same shot from the, do you recall where this is from? Is this from the sizzle reel or is this from the first trailer? Of the, what we see is a, someone in a rebel flight suit, the orange flight suit, being escorted. Looks like some prisoners of war here.
Right. Some sand troopers have gathered together three X-Wing pilots. They don't have their helmet or little box on their chest, but they're clearly X-Wing pilots. The first one is leading and his hands are shackled and they're walking through the marketplace, presumably on Jeddah. Now, what I find striking about this shot is it had caught my attention when we'd previously seen it. The lead pilot walking, guy with a beard, his forehead was completely lacerated and blood was dripping down his face in this shot as he was being paraded to presumably some prison camp. So he'd obviously been through some rough time and everything, but it was more blood than we're accustomed to seeing in Star Wars films, typically. And you know how we've been talking about the reshoots and trying to capture a tone that might have been missing from Rogue One, a Star Wars tone specifically. I think now that we see this pilot in the new trailer, he's walking along. He is not lacerated. He's not bleeding. Mm-mm. So they've cleaned him up considerably. And I think that's part of the simple tone reestablishment that's going on. And we, you know, of course, they didn't go back and reshoot this scene and not put makeup on him or anything. They just removed it with computer paintbrushes. But it's indicative of the fact, and I will say fact, that the reshoots and a lot of the editing going on here after the fact is being done so to soften the tone, make it more consistent with The Force Awakens, and make it less of a gritty, harsh, and maybe even violent Star Wars film. And I think all those things I just said, gritty, harsh, violent, I think that was the mandate when it came to shooting this thing. Give us gritty, give us harsh. We want blood! Blood! But no. It doesn't when they put together the cut and they said, this is it, this is the film, and executive sat down and watched it. They said, well, you know what? This is a great film, but it's too gritty. It's too violent. It's too bloody. It's too much. We gotta tone it down. We've got to tone it down. Well, so that's what they're doing.
I mean, I will say that you know, I remember when the prequels were coming out, and it was very difficult not to sort of compare and contrast with Lord of the Rings. And Lord of the Rings was sort of, it was one of the first kind of real, you know, genre film series that was very, I still consider it to be very gritty for its time. And I remember a lot of people expecting and hoping that the prequels were going to be that. The prequels were going, Star Wars was going to age with the original Star Wars generation, so that it was going to be a film that, you know, if you were, say, 10 years old in 1977 and, you know, 1999, you were whatever that is, so you're in your 30s, and it would be more appealing to someone in that age group. And now with Disney at the helm, I think there was still some renewed for that type of fan out there that wants to see Star Wars age with them and not sort of stay in that, you know, 12, maybe 10, 15 to 15 year old young person demographic. I think they're going to be disappointed, because I think that this is a clear sign that they're not going to cross that line. If we're removing blood,
they obviously were comfortable enough to show us this sequence before with that pilot's head being in the state it was in.
I think it's interesting that you guys noticed this, because I didn't pick up on this at all. But in the 501st, I think there's a rule where you can't have red blood on your costume. Like, if you want to have a costume like a death trooper or something with blood on it, it can't be red. It has to be like brown or something. And I think that's a rule because of, you know, Disney and Lucasfilm. You don't want to have that sort of image. And I never would have thought this would be something appearing in like the movie where they would have to remove it, because it just never even crossed my mind.
Now, I know everyone's yelling at us right now saying, well, what about the stormtrooper who wiped the bloody handprint on Finn's face mask on his helmet? Mm-hmm. What about that? There's blood. That's blood.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, there's a real purpose to that. The purpose being so you identify Finn. He's a standout among all those other stormtroopers at the beginning of the film. So you focus on him. You know who you're looking at every time. Mm-hmm. When Kylo Ren turns and gives him a look right before he releases that laser blast, he looks at, no, it's Finn. You know, I mean, so there's an obvious purpose for that. So I don't mean to be like hypocritical or anything, but that's just... that was there for a specific purpose. Just having blood in the movie just for the sake of having blood doesn't pass muster, I think, when it comes to how they're editing this film today.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I remember right, weren't in the initial raid on the blockade runner in A New Hope, weren't some of those trooper blasts and the blast marks on the rebels softened up in the special edition?
Absolutely, it was. And so when they do the raid, the raid on the Death Star, when they go to the detention block and they open fire, he's loose.
Right.
There was one Imperial officer in the original, you know, home video release of Star Wars. I mean, who he took the blaster bolt in the chest in the squib they had there. It just like it lit his shirt on fire. It went down. You could see a hole burning through this man. And they actually toned that down. Lucas toned that down when the re-edits came up for the special edition release.
Yeah, well, we know George was on the set of this. I'm not claiming that he had any great influence, but maybe he was like, get that blood off his face.
Didn't Gareth Edwards say that George was kind of breaking balls when he was walking around the set? That's not how I do it.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he did.
He was, maybe he wasn't just kidding around.
Right.
So much blood.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'll be honest with you guys. I've never been on the side of, you know, hey, I want Star Wars to age with me. I want Star Wars to be, adult, and I want a, you know, grown up Star Wars movie. I've always loved the fact that it has stayed true to sort of its target demographic, and it's either your thing and you like it or you don't. And so I actually, I guess it you get new perspective, Savannah, and maybe someday you will too. I don't want to sound like the old guy, but you know, as a parent, when you love being able to take your kids and look, not that, you know, I'm trying to shield my kids from blood, but to me, it's representative perhaps of a desire to keep this appropriate for younger people. And I honestly, I'm all for it as long as it doesn't affect the story. Put it that way.
I think Star Wars needs to be for kids, because I think kids need inspiration through movies. And I think Star Wars is a great source of inspiration for kids. Like when I grew up watching Star Wars, I was like, oh, I want to go make movies. And I would go in my backyard and make Star Wars movies. And now that I'm older, I can appreciate the details in the films. And it doesn't need to be violent or inappropriate. It doesn't need to be adult. I can still appreciate it for being, you know, having some humor and being clean, you know, and not inappropriate. Sure. So I like it when Star Wars movies stay true to that. And I don't want that to change, because every new generation needs a source of inspiration like I grew up with and like you guys grew up with. Like, everybody needs that.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's more than just blood and violence, too. I feel like there shouldn't be any sort of sex in Star Wars, you know?
Right.
Romance, yes. But I'll always remember the quote from Kirsch about the kiss between Han and Leia on board the Millennium Falcon. I remember being a kid thinking about that, because we saw in the posters, you know, prior to the film being released, that there was, it was coming. Whether you liked it or not, kid, there's going to be kissing in this movie. And and as an 11-year-old, or however old I was in 1980, 11, it was like, ew, you know, that's just, you know, I didn't want it to be bogged down by some sort of romance. But that's how I felt as a kid, as a boy, you know, what do you want? But I agree with Kirsch when he describes that scene. And he says, when you see them begin to kiss each other, that in a Star Wars film is the equivalent of hardcore porn. And I may be paraphrasing or said.
I think he said softcore porn. Whatever.
To me, is softcore to everyone else. But he's very conservative.
Yeah.
However, I get that.
Yeah.
There are just certain beats in to the rhythm that need to be there. You know, when you hear a song that's a piece of blues music, you recognize it as blues music. Mm-hmm. When you hear something that's jazzy, you recognize jazz. You hear funk, you know it's funk, just because of the certain elements that must be present. But also, there are certain elements that should never be present. And I look at Star Wars very much in the same way. And I appreciate how there's need to take risks with things like tone and even making it a little more mature. But I don't know how far you want to go with that before then it stops being Star Wars.
Yep.
A lot of my Trekkie friends complain to me, new Star Trek is too much like Star Wars. And that's because it's going in places maybe it shouldn't be going into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think the personality of the property is, you know, definitely, at least on the Trek side, you know, a little bit in danger of losing itself. But and I don't want to see that happen to Star Wars, and it doesn't look like it is. I mean, so far I think so great. Some really great visuals. Okay, so we see the parade of the prisoners, and Jyn turns as she's in probably her what do they call it? What was it when they released the figures of Anakin and Padme when they were kind of undercover? Was it their And they did with Qui-Gon in the poncho. Was it like the Outlander peasant disguise? Yeah, peasant disguise. There you go.
They're casual wear.
Yeah, I think Jyn is kind of in her peasant disguise here, but she's looking, and you know, she has this look like she would love to just bust those guys free, you know. But she's there. Clearly, that's not her mandate. That's what I'm reading on her face. Mm-hmm. Here she is, you know, a new member of the Alliance and on this important mission, but she can't jeopardize it to save these guys. And maybe we can assume that they're probably off to their deaths, perhaps. Okay, moving on.
We destroyed our home.
Ah, now this night battle, you destroyed our home. So we have Baze Malbus. You know that guy. When he die,
He has a big gun.
He has a big gun, yeah.
My English very limited. But this guy die, she die over there. They all die.
Big gun.
I killed that one over there. They all dead.
Right. Imagine being in the room when he said that. I was there in that panel, and we were all looking at each other just like, what? Like,
Was there a room reaction? Because you can't really pick it up on the video. Was there a room reaction?
I don't think there was a room reaction of like a gasp or anything, but everybody I was sitting with, we all looked at each other just like, wait a second, did you hear what I just heard? Because I think I heard something I wasn't supposed to hear. And that was sort of the reaction. I don't remember hearing any sudden noise, like anybody gasping or whatever, but we looked at each other like, whoa, he just slipped up on something.
How you say spoiler alert?
Hey, well, no, we won't say who Baze said was going to die. Okay. That means we don't have to play the spoiler alert. But he die, she die, they all dead. Everybody dead.
Okay. So
Baze, I don't die. I don't die.
They destroyed our home.
Get on spinoff.
We see him with the big gun, and this guy just looks totally just badass, just fantastic. He's taking out all these stormtroopers at some sort of Imperial battle station or area, and then you see Chirrut coming up here behind him with his staff. But now they're starting to give you a little bit of insight into the characters. He's talking about they destroyed our home. And so there's motivation here. So these guys are locals, perhaps to Jeddah. So we've got Malbus and Chirrut, mm-hmm. Donnie Yen.
But you can already see, I mean, and just tell the nature of these characters are so vastly different, Baze and Chirrut. Because Baze seems all about revenge and blowing stuff up and taking back what was his. Well, Chirrut is more along the line of that sort of Jedi philosophy and way of life, I think. I mean, that's just from scratching the surface here. And you know what? When I freeze frame this stuff, I keep thinking to myself, couldn't you see Dengar in this movie somewhere? I don't know why.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
Dengar? Yeah.
Dengar.
For sure. Yeah.
Wouldn't He's that got be, that gritty look.
That would just be a wonderful cameo to see Dengar in Rogue One. I just, for some reason, I'm getting a Dengar vibe, guys.
I could see that. Yeah. I could see that. All right. So moving on here, we've got another shot of Jeddah. This is the U-Wing kind of sweeping around and very Star Warsy here.
Mm-hmm. I fear nothing. All is as the Force wills it.
All right. Now, so we saw Baze in action. Now we're getting to see Chirrut and Jem. Yes. A great point about the contrast between these two characters. Chirrut looks as though he's following the Yoda model, which is he's using his skills and his abilities for defense, not for attack.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like he's trying to, almost have sort of a almost like diplomatic pacifist kind of way, except when they start to attack him, he's going to attack back. And those milky eyes all of a sudden, show the fire of a very fierce warrior. And is he have a sword or is he doing all of this with a staff? I can't.
It looks like just a staff.
Just a staff.
Yeah.
And that quote, I think that quote is going to become one of the best quotes in all of Star Wars when this movie is over.
That's the one that's going to stick, huh? That's going to be.
I really, really like that one. And I've seen people sharing the trailer on social media and they'll put that quote as their caption, and I'm like, okay, people are liking this.
I fear nothing. All is as the Force wills it. So, Jim, again, back to your point about contrasting these two characters, and we sort of knew, based on the panel at Celebration Europe, that these guys are very, very different. Both actors talked about, even though they're very close friends, the characters, they're very different. You have Baze that they destroyed our home. Yes, as you said, revenge and motivation. And then you have this, all is as the Force wills it. So someone who is just trying to stay in tune with the Force. I want to mention this too, because it was always very important to me as a kid and as a Star Wars fan of the original trilogy to believe that the Force was attainable and usable by anyone who chose to believe and dedicate yourself to its teachings. And then the prequels came around and it was, it was all about the chosen one. And it was all about, this very elite group of warriors that were born with this, ability and all of that. And I'm really
personally very happy to see the Force start to get, you know, it's like the Force for the rest of us. You know, if this guy can have the Force, this blind guy here on Jedha, then, you know, maybe there's still hope for the rest of us. What do you guys think?
Well, I think there is the distinct possibility that he could have been rejected by the Jedi based on his blindness.
They declared him 4F?
Yes.
What's he saying?
Yes. That could be the case, or he's a maybe a, kind of a watchdog in a way over something precious on the planet, or just because of the fact he lives on this planet, which, you know, has significance to the Jedi and to the Empire without question, and it is a place where you find the crystals for lightsabers, I'm assuming the crystals, then maybe there's just something about his natural instinct that guides him towards the Force and opens him up to it. As opposed to being a religious zealot of some sort, maybe the Force just comes to him naturally, and he was never trained. It's just that's what people on the planet Jedha do. If they choose to open up to it.
Sure. I mean, I think of General Dodonna. I think of Admiral Akbar. I think of these, you know, I hate to use this term, but it helps me. You know, you have kind of the religious and the secular, you know, these more secular, non-spiritual, non-force characters invoking the Force. May the Force be with us. It's almost like sort of a God bless you type greeting or figure of speech. And this just seems like it's going back to that, where it's less elitist. I don't know. Savannah, am I wrong in kind of looking at the Jedi and of the prequels as kind of this elite group?
I think his character reminds me a lot of Maz Kanata, though, because she says that she's not a Jedi, but she knows the Force. So obviously there's people out there who don't align with either side, who aren't a Jedi or a Sith, but they know the Force and they're in tune with it and they understand it. And, you know, we don't know a lot about Maz's history, but it makes me think of, well, maybe she's similar to this new character, or maybe they have similar backgrounds. I don't think Maz is as spiritually in tune with the Force as Donnie Yen's character, but obviously she's connected with it in some way. And it just makes me interested to see, what is his background? How did he connect with the Force? I don't know if he would have been rejected by the Jedi. I don't think the Jedi would look at handicaps necessarily, because I think that you can train through those. But I don't know.
I don't know. I thought that was when Jimmy said that, I thought that was a very interesting concept, because, you know, we know that even though the prequels show the Jedi in their prime when it starts, and then you show the decline, you know, Yoda talks about the arrogance that is set in. And, you know, going back to when we saw, you know, Mother Talzin and the Night Sisters, Dave Filoni was right there to remind us, you know, that the Jedi were, and I'm paraphrasing Dave, but, you know, were just one manifestation of the Force. Mm-hmm. The Sith were another manifestation of the Force. So, I think we're in danger of sort of shrinking in the Star Wars universe, shrinking and minimizing the impact and the power of the Force by only limiting it to one or two groups.
Right.
And so you may have, you know, a whole lot. You know, we look at Laura Santeca from The Force Awakens. We're all kind of scratching our head like, what do you mean the Church of the Force? What was this? But are we being very, very limited in our view by just making it exclusive to the Jedi and the Sith. So,
and it seems interesting how Force users aren't recruited to join the Jedi. It would be impossible for the Jedi to find every Force user in the galaxy when they're an infant and bring them to the temple to be trained. Now, you'd have to imagine that the parents would probably have something to say about this. You know, no, you're not taking my kid to be one of your space policemen. No, that's how I'd be. I greet him at the door with a baseball bat, you know. And then the other thing is maybe it's just, you know, some people just don't
ever want to join the organization that is the Jedi. You know, because you'd have to be at a point where you know you have Force capabilities and you want to unleash your potential. But, like, say, if the Jedi haven't found you as an infant.
Yeah. It's kind of like going corporate.
Right? Maybe, Jedi. Maybe you'd just be like, hey,
it's
listen,
the man.
I use the Force my way. Oh, but remember, Yoda said Luke was too old to train, and he had no problem saying that. So how many people did they reject from any sort of training once they reached a certain age? You know, maybe.
See, Savannah, we know they're ageist.
Yeah, we know that.
Maybe they're also prejudiced on the handicaps.
Can I talk about a visual? Can I talk about a visual here? When the tank is coming through the alleyway on in Jedha, you just have to rewind a little bit back to about 53 seconds. You see this character there. He's standing to the left of the frame as the tank passes by. He looks like, you know, he's a big guy. He's got on like armored trousers, and he has some sort of backpack on, and he's shirtless. He looks like Master Blaster from the Mad Max universe. You see a lot of people have been saying this online. He appears to be headless in this
show. I looked at this too.
Ooh, that's creepy. I just thought maybe he's like looking down, or he's like
hunched over,
lower or something.
Or maybe that stormtrooper smacked him upside the head as he was walking by.
It looks like he's also wearing some sort of like a rocket pack too.
Yeah, some kind of weird jetpack.
And his belt, you know, Jim, you're right. His belt and his pants, or looks like it's armor very similar to the stormtrooper. You see the black underneath, behind his knees. But you can tell by the hands that this is definitely an alien of some sort.
Yeah.
So perhaps I think Savannah's right. I think his head is like kind of where his chest might be.
Yeah.
But he does look headless.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy. Maybe he is headless.
Maybe he's nearly headless.
There was a headless character in the background of one of those droids cartoons, if I remember correctly, just standing up against a wall. Some headless
character?
Yeah. I kid you not.
All right. All right, so we're going to start this. All right, so the tank comes in.
As the Force wills it.
The captain says you are a friend. I will not kill you.
Ah, there we go. Our kind of our first sense of K2SO's personality, voiced by Alan Tudyk, and a little bit more of the humor again, guys. We hear so, you know, we're not talking knee slapping here, but definitely a lighter the dialogue. You know, that they're choosing to share with us, more dialogue I think in this than we've seen or heard so far, which is really helping us get to know these characters a little bit more, you know, their dynamics. But I like what I'm seeing here, and I think this is another one of those moments. We're talking about a very short trailer, but within this short amount of time, you know, they have to choose everything very deliberately, so some of these lines that they're choosing to show definitely demonstrate the direction that they're going tonally.
Yeah. This is the second time we're seeing K2. The first time we saw him was at Star Wars Celebration Europe when Alan Tudyk revealed a little brief clip of him during the Rogue One panel. Judging by some of the comments Alan has made, I'm under the impression that this droid had a really sadistic personality until they've started the re-editing, and they may have toned him down a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes. I'm under that impression. He spoke just recently about lines of his being taken out of the film, and he wanted to reveal one of those lines. Gosh, I think it was in the Entertainment Weekly interview from this week. He wanted to reveal some of those lines during this interview, but then he thought twice about it and kept his mouth shut. Also, the thing that strikes me about this droid is its height. I think it definitely does remind me of some of the old power droids. I mean, not power droids, dummy, battle droids from the prequels.
Oh, yeah.
Not like so skeletal.
The super battle droids.
A little bit, but not as skeletal. I find that his chest plate looks similar to that of the one that General Veers was wearing on the AT-AT on Hoth, and similar to Dengar's chest plate in many ways. Obviously, he's all mechanical, though, and he has the Imperial cog on his shoulder. So he's a liberated Imperial droid.
He's been reprogrammed.
And from what I'm led to understand, we do see others of his type in this film still in service to the Empire.
All right.
And his chest plate actually looks similar to a Galactic Marine as well, which are with Commander Bacara. So I think that's kind of neat because I'm a huge clone fan and I also love droids. So when I saw this character, I was like, oh my gosh, he's like a clone droid almost because parts of his costume sort of look like clone armor. Mm-hmm. So I got really excited about that.
Oh, he does, actually.
Good call. Good call.
All right. So moving on here.
Thanks.
And you get a little better shot of Cassian's that coat that he's wearing, which I think, Jim, we've talked about how it kind of reminds us of what Han is wearing on Hoth.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, this shot is really interesting. So here what looks to be a perspective shot of the Death Star orbiting Jedha, but from a different point of view. Talk about a different point of view. Upside down, perhaps.
Okay.
Did you notice this?
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple things that I thought of. Number one, in space, what's up, what's down?
Well,
you know, they have artificial gravity on this sucker, so does it really matter? Maybe they had to move in this position to aim the laser dish at a certain portion of the planet. Maybe they're not looking to blow the whole sucker up, but this could be part of the weapons test where they might blow a big chunk off of the side of the planet. Who knows? Or it could be a matter of perspective where we're looking at maybe the Death Star is actually on the bottom part of the planet. So it'd be, you know, South Pole, and we're just looking at it from a funky perspective. But very cool to see the dish on the wrong side. Maybe it had two dishes.
Maybe the approach of the strike team as they, you know, maybe they're approaching the Death Star from the bottom.
Or maybe the Death Star always had two dishes, one on top and one on bottom, but we only saw the top one during the A New Hope. Yeah, no? No?
Oh.
Hello? Guess what, kids? We got two. No, there are two of them.
All right, so that is really cool. I love the eclipse that's caused by the Death Star moving into position. That's kind of a chilling sight.
Creepy.
And you also you see that mountain fortress on the horizon there, right underneath the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Right.
Every day they grow stronger.
Every day they go stronger. We see director Orson Krennic, played by Ben Mendelsohn.
And notice
gorgeous cape.
What, you love the cape?
I love the cape. I totally dig it. I want to do like a femme version of this costume just so I can have the cape.
Sweet. You know, I tell you, if it was socially acceptable, I would wear a cape. Every day.
Sometimes I do wear a cape. You know, her universe has a dress that looks like Darth Vader, and it has a cape permanently attached to it. And you know what? Sometimes you just got to wear a cape.
You know, I think girls can get away with it better than guys, because I think guys always look like we're some sort of dictator or superhero or something. You know, like we're compensating for something. Just own it? All right. We're going to own it. All right.
I always sit on it, so when I lean forward, it chokes me. So it's very impractical for me. But I just want to say about this shot, Krennic, apparently he's in the control room on the Death Star, okay? Mm-hmm. This is all starting to add up, because if you look out the viewport, it's the same planet that we previously saw the upside-down Death Star orbiting. So, and look at the perspective here. It clearly appears that they're South Pole. So maybe that it's just a matter of perspective on that previous shot.
Yeah. And then, maybe it has something to do with approaching it more stealthily from the bottom.
See us coming from underneath.
Say that to the people in Australia, right? In New Zealand. By the way, how do they not fall off? I always wondered that. You Australian listeners, I'm just curious. You probably wonder the same thing about us. All right, so there's Krennic looking very grumpy, very grumpy. And we start to see the titles this December. More U-wing, or no? Excuse me, I don't think that's the U-wing. Some sort of transport.
That's the U-wing. That's it.
Is that the U-wing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's it.
Is that JR or Bobby? Which U-wing is it? Little joke. Playing off Jimmy's
My playing off my
show called Dallas.
It's my love of 80s primetime soap operas coming back to haunt me.
But we got some rebels jumping out of here and engaging in combat.
Now that looks X-Wings great.
Fly overhead. Whoop.
I love the South Pacific Theater here. Yeah, I mean, it was always, you know, when you want to think historically, I always loved the stuff that happened in the South Pacific Theater in World War II. I mean, I just always thought it was amazing, the contrast of having the paradise setting, the palm trees and everything, with all this violence going on. And, of course, one of my all-time favorite films is Saving Private Ryan. Who could forget that part at the beginning when they're storming the beach? So echoes of those films definitely in my mind right now.
Yeah, oh, for sure. For sure. But you're right, Jim. I mean, I know that a lot of folks, when we first started seeing glimpses of this, thought it was a very un-Star Wars-y like setting, a scene, this kind of tropical type planet. But I think that juxtaposing this combat, this type of combat with that idyllic, you know, as you say, paradise is really striking. And just like the dogfights, you know, in the European theater, informed and certainly inspired George Lucas, perhaps they went back to the source, which is, you know, World War II footage, and said, you know, we never really saw anything like this in Star Wars, so let's add this element in there. All right, so now more Donnie Yen, and
97.6% chance of failure.
All right, K2SO telling Cassian the odds.
Never tell me the odds.
I think we all said that after he said what the odds were. Am I wrong? Did we not all say, never tell me the odds?
Oh, absolutely. We all, yeah. Yes, it was as if a million voices cried out and were suddenly silenced all together in unison last night.
He means well.
Yeah, he means well. So again, more of this humor as it's contrasted against the backdrop of all this war. X-Wing flying through the mountains.
This is our chance.
And a great shot of Baze with his big gun. killing the AT-ACT. Sea Hoth troopers, it is possible. You don't have to have a tow cable. You can bring these things down.
Well, by that point, then the armor had become impenetrable. But during Rogue One, they still were working out some of the kinks in the armor, if you will. But it's a cool shot. I like how he just kind of, again, pardon my language, he sort of bitch slaps the walker, because the walker turns its head, like, you know, what do they call that when you hit someone so hard that their face goes from east to west? It's there's a name for it, and I can't remember it, but
I don't know, but I'm with you, Jim. What struck me was how, you know, these things have always kind of looked like dogs. There's something very animal like about them, and so that reaction, you know, seemed very odd for a machine, but it also worked too, you know. But you're right, it was almost like an animal type reaction to the blast.
And I think the shot of the X-Wings was my wow moment. Like, I wanted to go back to that frame because the silhouettes were so familiar to me. And I really liked how it was a night shot. And they were like kind of like headlights on the X-Wings. So that was one of the moments in the trailer when I was like, oh, I love that. And I went back to that later to see that shot, to see that frame again.
Now, when we see Luke show up on Dagobah, I'm trying to remember, or when he takes off on Dagobah Empire, if we see headlights.
Yes, we sure
do. We do see headlights?
Oh, my God. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's what illuminates the scene as he flies away.
Yes.
Or, headlights, maybe not headlights, but because there's those engine lights that shine on Yoda. But maybe that's more what it is. But I could swear you do see headlights on it.
Well, I get a kick out of the headlights on the Falcon all the time. I think that's funny. All right, so now we're back to Jin and Saw Gerrera. We're going to make a difference, and we see Saw, a little smile across the face of a very otherwise very serious character. Jumping to hyperspace in a very classic way. It seems like that's definitely a nod to sort of the classic hyperspace engagement there.
I love it. And I always felt
the swirls.
I always felt that that little element was something I really wanted to see in the prequels. You know, it's just something simple that is, you know, part of Star Wars to me. And when you didn't get that perspective of anyone making a jump to lightspeed in Phantom Menace, you know, that cockpit perspective is the stars elongate and boom, it, you know, mm-hmm. it's, and I get what George was thinking. He didn't want to diminish the impact of the first time we see that jump to lightspeed in episode four, under the belief that everyone in the world is going to watch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in order, you know. But I don't think so. I think by that point in time, the wow factor wasn't necessarily there anymore, because jumping to lightspeed had become such an important element to Star Wars that you expected to see it more than getting surprised by seeing it. So right. I think that horse had already left the stable. So it's something I like to see return to Star Wars films. And did we see, we saw the jump to lightspeed in
Force Awakens.
In the Force Awakens with a Wrath Tar hanging on the cockpit. So yeah, for sure. So, and that was fantastic. So just those little simple nods to the traditions of Star Wars visually, that appeals to me when we're talking about Rogue One right now.
All right. And more stuff blown up. Now this is a wow moment as Jyn is physically.
That would have made me poop my pants.
I mean, if there's any doubt what this character is made of as she walks limping towards the TIE fighter, I'm kind of hoping that this is a Chewie in the walker moment.
It could be.
Oh, yeah,
it could be. Maybe we're expecting something really dramatic and, you know, maybe a final showdown going on here. But really, how does one person walking on an elevated catwalk toward a fully armed and operational TIE fighter about 10 meters away, what are you going to do? So you hope
don't see Jyn in episode 4, so...
Well, that's true. You don't see Jar Jar either. It's something that just occurred to me with the swagger, the vest, the blaster at her side. You know, could we say perhaps that Rey was the female Luke, and are we looking at the female Han Solo here in Jyn Erso?
I think that's fair.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can really see that.
You know, apply the archetype to a new character. That's great. Mm-hmm. Don't give us the character, call her Han Solo, and expect us not to notice.
Right. Right.
All the way.
Are you with me? You know, that shot, before we get to the one that everybody's talking about, but where you kind of see the whole crew together, and it looks, you know, as she says, are you with me? This just has the look and the feels of The Last Stand. You know, this is where I think they realize how high the stakes are, that maybe they're not coming back. There's a high degree of emotion in Jyn's face as they kind of realize this is them recommitting themselves perhaps to this nearly impossible mission.
And we need a couple more ladies in there, though. We've got Jyn as the leader. We need a couple lady grunts in there because I'm not feeling the love with all these guys.
But she's bossing them around. What more do you want?
I know, but we need women represented in all areas. We need them even in the, you know, the grunt positions too, not just the leaders.
Well, listen to you. You're never satisfied, you lady. Never.
We're not going to be satisfied until we get what we deserve.
An all-girl Star Wars movie.
Well, you know, in all, that's basically where we're going here with this, you know.
Just a couple more. I'm not asking for 10 more. I just need like two more.
And that'll.
Well, there might be. Wait a minute. Hold on.
What?
Hold on. All right. I thought that was a girl. It's not. It's a very feminine looking guy. But it's close.
Jason's got the magnifying glass out and everything. But yeah,
I'll find you a girl.
They have a couple of those Endor troopers with them, it appears. And yeah, you know, it's they're on a suicide mission, I think, is what they're coming to terms with. You know, hey, we're leaving this, but not many of us are coming back. So maybe if there was any sort of friction between some of the characters, maybe that gets swept aside at this time. And this is the moment where they really come together as a team. If you look in the background, you can clearly see Harley Quinn hugging the Joker. It's everyone's getting along. They're all united to go on the Suicide Squad mission and to get those plans to the Death Star.
All right, and we have the title treatment, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, followed by Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
All right.
Now, Savannah, are we disappointed that we don't see a braided ponytail coming out of the back of his helmet there?
You know, I was hoping for two braided ponytails. I was doubly
Where's the femme
down.
Vader? Come on.
Well, I mean, you know, because the Sith always work in twos, so.
Hello.
So
we see Vader. This is different from what I gather, and I've only seen the Celebration trailer. Actually, you were there, right, Savannah? So you saw it. You saw it live. So is this the same shot, or is this a very different shot from the Vader that we saw, or that you saw in the exclusive trailer for Celebration?
I think this is different. I'm gonna say I think. I'm pretty confident, but I'm gonna say I think because I only saw that real once. They only played it once and I have a horrible memory. But I don't think this is the same one that we saw, the same clip of Vader at all.
Not at all.
From the descriptions and what we saw in the sort of the poorly recorded
bootleg.
The bootleg. it was a reflection. We're seeing the actual helmet here, the actual specter figure of Vader.
Yes, you're right.
As opposed to just reflection. There's already a little bit of criticism. People are saying, well, he looks kind of hunched over.
What?
He doesn't look menacing. I'm innocently just repeating what I'm seeing online. There is a little bit of backlash saying that he just doesn't look imposing. And I can't say
You're just looking at him straight on. You're actually a little elevated in this shot. So, of course, he's not going to look menacing because you're not looking up at him.
Yeah,
you're just
but
looking
this is,
straight on.
This is a character that has a history of some of the greatest entrances in movie history. His entrance in A New Hope. His entrance in Return of the Jedi. Even the first time you see him in Empire Strikes Back. You get this impression of this larger-than-life, hulking, menacing, fear-inducing, the stuff of nightmares type character, and I don't see it. It almost looks like the kid in the Darth Vader kid in the car commercial from the Super Bowl a few years ago.
Oh my God,
this could be Mini Vader.
Are you seeing the same trailer I am? What is this? Where are you getting this extra information from? All I see is the back of his helmet. What are you seeing?
I just think that the fact that it's this kind of weird back shot of just the shoulders and you don't really see much more of it. I'm telling you, I think he's kind of dwarfed here a little bit.
Well,
I don't
you
think
know
this
what?
Is the...
That's how they're playing it, though. They're just showing just brief little glimpses of him before we see him in the film. They're just trying to do something to let you know Vader's in this.
Is it effective? I think that's what we're here to talk about. Is it effective? I don't think this is a very effective shot of Vader. I got to admit it. I don't think it is.
I think that's a fair enough criticism, but I think that, you know, so far we've already seen about 25% of Vader in this film to begin with. He's not going to be in Rogue One very much. And I think
We don't know that. We've heard reports.
Bresnikan heard it, and I listen to what Anthony reports more than anyone. And he heard that Vader is going to be in the movie sparingly. And that is the exact term he used, sparingly. And there were some of those reports we were hearing early on that Vader's scenes, the violence that he unleashes is, quote, brutal. Well, I don't know if we're going to necessarily be seeing brutal Vader anymore in Rogue One, based on what we've been hearing about the way that they're reapproaching this film.
Yeah, I want to say, you know, when you say sparingly, I mean, that's certainly open for interpretation. You know, you think about a Batman movie. How much time do you actually see? Now, I haven't seen the latest one, but if you think about 89 Batman, you think about the Nolan films, the times that you actually see the amount of time in the film that you see Batman in the suit is actually a pretty small percentage of time. Think about the amount of time you actually see dinosaurs in the first Jurassic Park. You can have it done in such a way that, yes, if you were to clock it, maybe it's of just a few minutes out of a 2-hour movie, but it's so impactful you think they're there the whole time. And I just wonder if we're going to be looking at something similar, you know, a similar phenomenon with Vader. If you clock the time, it may not add up to much, but if it's done in a way that it's super impactful, and I hope it's more impactful than this little glimpse, I would have just as soon seen the shadow. I think the shadow was a lot more, you know, we heard Gareth Edwards talk about how sort of serendipitous it was that they sort of stumbled upon that shot of Vader that was used in that celebration trailer. I think it was more effective than this. Though, Savannah, you've seen both. What do you think?
I think the first one was more effective just because it was a little more obscure. But, like, you knew it was Vader, obviously. And this one's just so in your face. And, like you said, I don't think he looks very menacing here. Not that he needs to. But I think if they had angled the camera down a little more and you're looking up at him and he looks bigger and a little scarier, maybe it would have been more effective. But I think the one that I saw in Europe was a little more effective because it was abstract. And this one is just very literal.
Yeah, I agree. Jim, you're not feeling this. You're thinking that this is okay.
I'm fine with it. I'm so pumped up to see Darth Vader return to Star Wars films. I'm fine with it. I really am. I think too many nits are being picked right now. And
I have a question.
Well, let's see. Wait a minute. I just want to remind Jim that we've spent about an hour and a half dissecting a 1-minute trailer, and you're worried about too many nits being picked.
Darth Vader. Darth Vader's a family member, you know, and you have to accept. Sometimes, you know, family members have good
flaws.
The flaws. You have to accept and love them for all of their flaws, and you have to see through them like I do. That's unconditional love. Star Wars!
Were you guys expecting to see him at the end of the trailer, though? Because I was, and then I watched people's reaction videos, and they were shocked to see him, and I was like, guys, we kind of knew this was coming.
That's
like,
because
you
know as well as I do, those reaction videos are a big bunch of phony baloney, okay? If you know there's a camera on you, then forget about it. You have to be stealthy. You have to. If you post your own reaction videos, you're a liar. You're a phony baloney. If somebody else shoots you and you don't know it, then you're a rock star. That's the real deal. That's a reaction video. So I like that. But as far as Vader showing up at the end, it's interesting because my power was out. So I went across the street to my friend's house and barged in there. They were watching a Cubs game. I'm like, put on the Olympics. And okay, all right, whatever, guy. And put on the Olympics and waited. And then finally the trailer hit. And at the very end, when they cut to the title card there, I started this mantra. I was like, show Vader, show Vader, show Vader, show Vader, Vader. And I was like, Vader, there it is. And everyone was like, ooh, wow. You know, they wanted to give me money to go to Vegas and place on horses for them. But I was totally expecting it at the end. But I was shocked by the actual shot we saw. It sounds like that shot sounds like a shot somebody described to me about a month ago. So I'm going to have to ask them. I'm going to have to ask that person some questions about where they saw
now,
that.
Savannah, you're a member of a very elite club because you have actually seen now both of the trailers, and we've only seen these crude bootlegs. Try to, if you can, kind of give us a sense of how you felt after you saw the one in Europe and then this one and maybe the differences that jumped out at you, if there were any.
Well, for me, it's so hard to compare these two because just the environment I was in was completely different. When I watched the one in Europe, obviously I'm in a room with 4,000 other people that are screaming over this thing that only we're getting to see.
Yes, and the energy, and then, the energy is palpable. You feel it coming off of everyone. It's like the difference between going to a rock concert and listening
to tracks on iTunes. You know,
exactly. Yeah, and so when I watched this one on TV in my living room with like two of my friends who were super excited as well, but it's not like being in a giant auditorium with people. The reaction was definitely different, and I got more excited, I think, about the one in Europe just because I had just seen the panel and Gwendolyn Christie was there. And then they show, you know, the sizzle reel. And then we got the trailer. Like, there was so much leading up to it. And then this one that just came out, we had been watching Olympic swimming. And you're like, okay, give us Star Wars. And then you see the trailer finally. So I think the buildup of the one in Europe made the actual trailer better. The one in Europe, though, was very visually driven. It was just very quick pieces of scenes, not a ton of dialogue. And the one that we saw last night was very story driven. And you could tell that there was a reason for showing us a new trailer and not just the one in Europe. So it's hard to compare them because they're very different experiences. But for me personally, I enjoyed the one in Europe more just because I was around all my friends and so many other people that were hyped up about this. And there were some images in that Europe trailer that really stuck in my mind and that really stayed with me. And I had only seen it once. And I'm like, wow, that must have been a good trailer for it to really stick in my mind like that. I can't remember the whole sequence of it, but there were definitely two or three images that stayed in my head. And after watching this one from last night, only like one image really stuck in my head.
I really regret that we don't have a good, clean copy of that last trailer, because I try to put myself in the position of I always try to think about the more casual fan. I was coming out of my skin when I saw this trailer, and I was watching it with my wife, and she said, wow, that really looks good. And so to me, that is sort of the test, you know, sort of the more casual fan. You know, I think about people like my brother who, you know, he'll go see a Star Wars movie, but he's not obsessive, you know, like I am and all of that. So I feel like in this case, that really delivered. I think it felt like Star Wars. I think it engages and captures people that maybe are back into the fold after The Force Awakens. Great use of iconography, Star Wars iconography. I felt the feels were there. I loved and Jim, I'm sure you and David Collins will be talking about the Imperial March. You know, the music that was used in this trailer, a little bit of a different take in the Imperial March. I thought the music was fabulous, well chosen. What says Star Wars more than the Imperial March? It was also perfect for me until that last shot of Vader. And I'm grateful for it. I thought it should have perhaps come earlier. I thought that it was a little bit of we've kind of done that. They did it in the last trailer, even though that wasn't widely released. So that's really my only criticism. I think if you're really going to show Vader in primetime television during one of the biggest ratings draws of the year or 4 years or 2 years, the Olympics. Could have used a little bit more and maybe a more dramatic shot that is really befitting that character.
Well, you know, that's fair. I want to be the devil's advocate here and tell you that I believe we should be aware of Vader's appearance in this movie. It should be used as a way to market this movie, but I like seeing him from behind. I like just getting a little almost subliminal alert that he's going to be in this film. I want to save the big Vader reveals for when we actually see the thing.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that. But if you're going to be obscure about the revelation, I think they could have just used that same shot before that they had before. That seemed a little bit more mysterious.
Yeah, right? I did like that shot a lot. And I would like to see it with some clarity. Thank you very much. But
maybe on the Blu-ray, Jim.
Oh, probably.
Or maybe the 3D Blu-ray. We'll have to wait and see. Hey, you know what? Let's speaking of, as Savannah pointed out, she was at Celebration when she saw her trailer. We've got a little update ourselves.
Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah, Star Wars Celebration Orlando coming, and we want you to know, rather, we want to know if you are interested in joining us for another Rebel Force Radio Celebration kickoff bash.
Yes.
Jimmy Mack, our party planner, we've got a targeted date already.
Yeah, we are shooting for Wednesday, April 12th. It's the night right before the convention's opening day. So just like in Anaheim, we're going to kick off the week of Star Wars the night before Celebration. So you want to be there with us. Our last party in Anaheim was a blast. Savannah, you were there. I remember seeing you there.
Yeah. It was super fun. I'm looking forward to going to another one.
Absolutely. Well, you're on the guest list. And I'll tell you what, so many people have let us know already that they're interested in joining us again in Orlando. I put the word out via our social media networks. We used Facebook and Twitter to let everyone know, hey, we're trying to gauge your temperature here. Get on the mailing list and we'll throw together a bash. If the response is adequate. Well, let's just say by only one post on Facebook, the response has been more than adequate. It's been overwhelming. We are well into the triple digits on this mailing list, so you don't want to hesitate. You want to get involved. Send an email, show@rebelforceradio.com with the subject line Celebration Bash. And if you do that, you will be among the first to receive the latest updates and news regarding RFR Celebration Orlando kickoff bash happening the night before Celebration. It's bound to sell out. We're going to be in a location very close to the convention center, within walking distance of most hotels. They're on the what do they call that convention center drive?
iDrive.
What's it called?
International Drive?
That's it. International Drive.
Oh.
All right. We'll be at a location right off International Drive, and it's going to be amazing. I'll be there. Swank will be there. Savannah will be there. We're going to have music. Probably be doing giveaways again. There'll be food and drink. It'll be amazing. So join us. Send us those emails. show@rebelforceradio.com with the subject line, Celebration Bash.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
Celebrate good times. Come on.
All right, let's give away something. Little Debbie's, perhaps.
Little Debbie. I'm sure we'll have Little Debbie with us at the Star Wars Celebration kickoff bash that we'll be throwing on April 12th. But they're present with us every week, quite honestly. It's not Rebel Force Radio unless Little Debbie is in the house. We love Little Debbie so much. It's back to school time. If you have kids going to school, it's always a good idea to throw in some Little Debbie in their lunchbox, and they'll be the pride of the playground for sure. I mean, talk about tray bait. You have it when you got Little Debbie. But of course, no kids ever, they don't go down that path. They don't trade away the Little Debbie because they want it for themselves. And our listeners are the same way, and they constantly let us know on Facebook, Twitter, all sorts of social media, spreading a word about Little Debbie and Rebel Force Radio. One such person is Darth Zakaris. Darth Zakaris, a.k.a. at ZachXAttack86. Darth Zakaris says, Rebel Force Radio and some work. The only thing that would make tonight better is a Little Debbie Galactic Snack Pack. And he features a photo of his iPhone or whatever his mobile device is there. And he's clearly listening to Rebel Force Radio with a bunch of charts and graphs of some sort on his computer screen. Looks like some pretty droll, boring stuff. So, Darth Zakaris, we hope we got you through that evening of some hard work. And to pay you for being such a hard worker. See, hard work always pays off when you're a Rebel Force Radio listener. You, Darth Zakaris, are getting a Little Debbie Galactic Snack Pack delivered right to your doorstep. All you have to do is send us an email, show@rebelforceradio.com, and send us your shipping address, and we will get that Galactic Snack Pack parcel post to you ASAP. It's going to be awesome. And talk about being the pride of the playground, Darth Zakaris. Prepare yourself to rise up high on the popularity meter once you are in possession of a Little Debbie Galactic Snack Pack. It's that great. Star Wars fans love Little Debbie. We love Little Debbie. And, of course, we're giving away Little Debbie each and every week here on Rebel Force Radio because Little Debbie is the official snack of fans across the galaxy.
good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
Well, the new Rogue One trailer may be the hottest story of the week, but it's not the only story to share with you this week. There's still some Force Awakens news. I got to tell you, this one surprised me a little bit. I guess looking back, I knew it was coming, but I didn't think that it was going to be coming this soon, at least in terms of the story. But the Force Awakens Blu-ray re-release is going to feel now. Here's something that's interesting about this. So this is on Entertainment Weekly. Force Awakens being re-released to Blu-ray in the 3D format. But the headline is not that it's being released in 3D. It's just new Star Wars Force Awakens Blu-ray will feature J.J. Abrams commentary and new deleted scenes. And I think, you know, guys, Jim, we've talked before about, you know, whether 3D is particularly in the home video market is a fad, is something that's not really here to stay, or it just never really took off. And I think that the proof of that is here with this headline. Who cares about the 3D? What we want is that JJ commentary and more deleted scenes.
Absolutely. I don't care about the 3D. As a matter of fact, the only time I saw The Force Awakens on a standard size screen in 3D, I walked out and asked for, I said, please let me go into just the normal 2D screening. The 3D worked for me greatly on an IMAX screen. I thought it was fantastic. But when I saw it on the standard size screen, I kept saying to Dylan, I was like, does that look dark? I couldn't make out any detail. It looked muddy. It looked dark. It was terrible. So I turned in my 3D glasses and said, let us go into the standard screening that starts in 10 minutes. And they did. You know, they were cool with it. No problem. I probably paid extra for that 3D too. Who knows? But I don't care. I just wanted to see
sure
the Force Awakens.
Sure,
but
you did.
But so now they're releasing this 3D collector's edition. The first question I have is the 3D. Is it something you turn on and off? Can just people who have normal 2D televisions and Blu-ray players purchase this thing so they can get all the special features, commentary track, etc.?
Yes, I think that the answer to that is yes. So it's a four-disc set, and so you're going to have the standard Blu-ray. You're going to have the 3D Blu-ray, so that's two of the discs. You will have perhaps, now I'm going to see here if there's a DVD with this or not. A lot of times these come packaged with either a DVD or a disc that contains a digital copy. And then there is, okay. Yeah, so it looks like then there's going to be a disc of the bonus features, and then there's the classic bonus features. So I think that what I hope is not the case is I hope that that J.J. Abrams commentary track is available on the standard 2D Blu-ray disc that's accompanying this. Again, in other words, I hope that you can listen to the JJ commentary and enjoy it along with the film without having to watch this in 3D. Because Savannah, do you have a 3D TV that's compatible?
I don't, and I don't like watching things in 3D because I hate wearing 3D glasses. Like when I'm watching a movie, I just want to be able to chill out. I don't want to have to worry about these stupid glasses that are annoying me. And when I went to see The Force Awakens in theaters, I saw it a lot in 3D because I wanted the extra merchandise they had for some of the 3D IMAX viewings. Mm-hmm. And the glasses annoyed me so much, like they hurt my face actually. So I'm hoping that all the extra stuff that's coming with this set, you can watch it without the 3D features, because I don't want to partake in that part of it. I just want to hear the commentary. I want to see the extra bonus features, but I don't want to have to wear 3D glasses.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a close up of they've got some great shots of the packaging and the discs that come with it there on StarWars.com. So, wow, you know, I just had excuse me guys, I had a crash.
Oh, no.
This is the first time ever that my MacBook Pro just crashed on me.
Oh.
But it was just the browser. Just the browser. So talk amongst yourselves here as I pull this up. But I wanted to see the detailed shot of the packaging so we can get an idea what's on all these discs.
That looks pretty cool from what I've seen of it. But, you know, Swank, you asked me, I think it was last week, you said, are you going to have to upgrade your technology for this new version of Star Wars like you always upgrade your technology only for Star Wars? Which is true. Right. I only upgrade my technology for Star Wars. But I said, no, no, I have a 3D TV. I'm good. I'm good. But I've been informed by the young tech master who lives in my house that we do not have a Blu-ray player capable of playing 3D.
Oh! So I have the solution for you.
What?
You guys have, wait a minute, you have an Xbox One, right? And that plays Blu-ray.
I think so, yeah.
I would be very surprised if the Xbox One did not support Blu-ray 3D, because the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation 4, which in my opinion is the best Blu-ray player on the market, does support the 3D format, or will output the 3D to your TV. Oh. So you've got the right TV, but you don't have the right player. I think you need to take a look and see if, in fact, I'm going to look right now, Xbox One, Blu-ray 3D... We got an answer. Can you play? Yes, you can. You can play 3D Blu-ray discs on the Xbox One.
That's cool.
According to the gods of Google.
And you said you can do that on PlayStation, right?
And you can do that on PlayStation as well. Yeah, just make sure your firmware is up to date. But that firmware update happened a long time ago. So
yeah.
But see, I'm in the position. I'm the exact opposite. I don't have the 3D capable monitor TV, but I do have the PlayStation. And but going back to the packaging, so it looks like four discs. We've got the 3D disc. We have what looks to be just exactly a repackaged version of the Force Awakens original. Oh no, it does come with the DVD. Okay, all right, this is starting to make sense. So we've got the Blu-ray 3D.
Yeah,
we've got the DVD.
Yeah.
We've got a bonus disc of bonus features, and then I'm going to take a wild stab and say that this other disc that's underneath the 3D disc is the just standard Blu-ray that's already been released. I'm hoping it has the JJ commentary on it. But let's go through some of these bonus features. Audio commentary with JJ. That was something that I thought was sorely, sorely missed in that first edition.
Mm-hmm.
I really wish they would have put that on there. You know, any time that you get JJ to talk about The Force Awakens, especially since the film's been released, it's always just cram-packed full of great things and little nuggets. He's very open about a lot of this stuff. So I think an audio commentary of this film with JJ is going to be really, really fascinating.
I believe that's a nickname of his, too, Little Nuggets.
We got the Foley artists. Foley, a Sonic Tale. Foley artists consisting of old pros and new talent unite to bring Force Awakens live through the matching of sound to action. Sounds of the Resistance. Hear how the epic sound design of Star Wars The Force Awakens moves the Star Wars legacy forward. I'm sure that'll be with Rebel Force Radio friends and sound legends Matt Wood and David Acord.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah, it was good. Some new deleted scenes. Now, we had heard rumors back when the original Blu-ray was coming out that we didn't see all of the deleted scenes that were thought to have existed. Is there anything jumping out at you guys that we didn't see that
yes.
That's out there? Jim, what comes to mind for you?
Unkar Plutt's arms being pulled off by Chewbacca. I'd love to see that. If you're
wait,
unaware,
I never heard about
oh,
that.
Oh no, okay, so you're
that
unaware.
Happened.
Well, you know what? This is something that they actually shot, and I believe it ended up in the novelization, if I remember correctly. But Unkar Plutt tracks Rey and the Falcon to Takodana, and makes an appearance at Maz's castle, and confronts Rey because she stole the Falcon. And Chewbacca intervenes and pulls his arms out of the sockets.
I want to see that.
Yes. And I have seen photographic evidence of this sequence being shot. I've seen the fake arm. I've seen it all. But I haven't seen the scene.
Are you telling me that I'm going to be able to watch Chewbacca rip the arms of Simon Pegg out of their sockets?
Well, that's on my wish list for this 3D collector's release. Yes, absolutely.
And you know, there's like a whole fan group of people out there who are obsessed with Star Wars characters who get their arms cut or ripped off. So Unkar Plutt would have to be added to that little character group.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so we're not losing limbs, having limbs ripped out of their sockets. Yeah.
We're People go nuts for that.
We are not recommending.
That's a weird fetish.
The thing is, we don't recommend that fans actually remove their limbs to show what kind of Star Wars fans they are. That's not recommended.
No, no. So the deleted scenes. Savannah, anything jumped to your mind about maybe a deleted scene that you've heard rumored that we haven't actually seen?
Not particularly, but I kind of wanted to see more interviews with the cast and the crew. When I watched the original bonus features from the DVD and Blu-ray set, I liked all the stuff they had in there, but I was like, okay, I want more. Like, I want to know more about how they did the makeup on some of these characters or made the costumes or made the props. Like, I'm really into that kind of stuff. So deleted scenes are cool, but I would prefer to see more interviews and footage of how they made some of these things.
Well, you are in luck, Savannah, because they've got a little doc on here called Dressing the Galaxy with the costume designer, Michael Kaplan, about how he how the costumes of the original Star Wars movies were re-envisioned for this new film. Now, this is going to be fun. This is called The Scavenger and the Stormtrooper, a conversation with Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, as they sit and have a chat together. Talk about the adventure of a lifetime becoming part of the Star Wars legacy. This also looks kind of fun. This is Inside the Armory, a fascinating tour through the design and creation of the weaponry in Star Wars The Force Awakens. That sounds...
Are those the same ones that were on the Target exclusive set when they originally released the DVD and Blu-ray?
Oh, good question. Yes, the Target edition did have some extra stuff on there. I think it was
It was the armory, and it was also the thing with John Boyega and Daisy, because that's where their little rat came from. That's what that video came from.
You are correct. So this is highly This is highly misleading, as they claim that this is never before seen stuff. Never before seen if you bought at Walmart.
Cares.
And then all the classic bonus features are back there.
It's all worth it if you see Simon Pegg's arms get ripped off.
True.
So when can you have all this? Why, just in time for the holidays, November 15th here in the United States. Australia getting a little bit sooner, November 9th. But all of the information you can find at StarWars.com. The official press release is there with all those release dates. The UK getting it on Halloween, October 31st. Not us. We have to wait. November 15th in North America. Why overseas? Why are they always getting everything early? Didn't they get Force Awakens like a week early over there, or 2 weeks early in France? We had to wait in the theaters.
It did. Well, it wasn't 2 weeks. It was maybe a day.
A couple of days.
Because remember, there was the
felt like weeks.
Remember, Air France was doing that promotion where they would fly you to France so you would be among the first to see Star Wars. You don't remember that? No.
I do remember that because they had Peter Mayhew on that trip. Didn't he?
Did they have Peter on that trip?
Yeah, Peter was on the plane.
Is that the flight where he got busted for having that lightsaber cane of his?
No.
Have you heard that?
That was before that. I have.
TSA held him up because he had a lightsaber. And
you know,
people were tweeting it and stuff.
I like to think that any Star Wars alum, you know, they don't even have to go through security. And Peter Mayhew was coming through there. Really, you're going to give that guy, you're going to shake him down? The TSA?
I wouldn't. He'll pick you up and throw you through the wall. I
get the no profiling thing, but let's use a little common sense.
Right on.
All right. Don't, you know, let the Wookiee through, okay?
You know it, you love it. From Topps comes the digital card collecting app, Star Wars Card Trader. Yes, collect and trade over 1,000 officially licensed Star Wars digital cards. All of your favorite characters, vehicles, and locations from the Star Wars universe are here, including replicas of those amazing and iconic original 1977 Topps Star Wars trading cards to futuristic all-new cards with exciting digital twists. And of course, you can find exclusive content from the all-time time U.S. box office champ, Star Wars The Force Awakens. Download it today in the App Store or in Google Play. And of course, we're using the Star Wars Card Trader app here at Rebel Force Radio. You can always trade with us here 24/7, 365 days a year. Just search username Rebel Force Radio and do it all from the comfort of your mobile device. It's the Topps Star Wars Card Trader app. These are the cards you're looking for.
Oh, how could we can't leave this out? This is pretty new. I think a lot of us knew this was going to happen, right? So the Han Solo film, we know who's playing Han Solo, Alden Ehrenreich. But, you know, what about Lando? I mean, you can't have a young Han Solo film without talking about Lando. And there's all kinds of speculation about who might be playing Lando. And Jim, you're going to have to take this one because I'm having all kinds of problems with my browser right now.
Well, here's the thing that's been getting floated around out there. This was broken by the website therap.com about casting being underway for young Lando. And they even have a code name in casting circles for young Lando. It's Chance. So that's what they're calling the character, Chance, as they're casting him. So the scuttlebutt is, according,
I had a dog named Chance once.
That's a great dog name. I mean, you could like write a country song about your dog named Chance. It seems like if you could work Lando into it, it's even a better song. But Den of Geek has uncovered some more information, and they are proclaiming a forerunner for the casting of young Lando is community star Donald Glover, top choice for the role, according to Den of Geek. Now, Glover is currently involved in the new Star Wars, in the new Spider-Man film, Spider-Man Homecoming. So it's, you know, I don't know if that's actually been shot. I think it has been, hasn't it? Or is it's being shot right now, the new Spider-Man. Who knows? But Donald Glover is the guy. And I'm trying to think to myself, have I seen this guy in anything? He's
in The Martian.
He's in The Martian. That was a great film.
Yeah.
Yes, he was. So he could be an interesting choice.
Who's he going to be in the Spider-Man movie?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
I can't answer that. You'd make me
is he Spider-Man? No, Tom Holland is Spider-Man, right?
I don't think his role has actually even been announced yet. It's just he's been casted. I'm not sure. I'm not cutting edge when it comes to Spider-Man. Lord knows I could barely keep up with Star Wars. But Donald Glover. Any relation to the Glover who was in those
Danny
movies?
Glover.
Danny Glover. Is he any relation to Danny Glover? No relation to...
No?
I'm looking on his Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah, no, they're not related.
His father is Donald Sr. So yeah.
I didn't even know this Donald Glover is a rapper. He's also a performer. He's a rapper. So he was on the show Community and also a musician.
And he was in Magic Mike.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, as Andre. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm looking at his creds.
Well,
wait a minute now.
Yeah, I think, young Lando, stripper. I could see that.
Well, again, no. we talked about... We talked about certain things that shouldn't be incorporated into Star Wars, and you've just gone into that territory, sir. But so, yeah, Donald Glover, I mean, we're just basing this off of one internet rumor, but it's fun to imagine the possibilities, you know?
I think a lot of people reacted well to that rumor. I saw a ton of people I follow on Twitter were like, oh, yeah, he would be awesome. I don't know how I feel about it, but it seemed like a lot of people liked the idea.
Well, Han Solo is one thing, but when you talk about smooth and cool, I mean, they just don't make dudes like Billy Dee anymore. It's so rare to have someone kind of exude that just total, complete, 100% ease with themselves in the world. And so this, you talk about big shoes to fill. This Donald Glover character, he's going to have big shoes to fill if this is true that he is young Lando. But I think you know, it you got to have young Lando in a young Han Solo film, right?
It sounds like it's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll continue to follow that story as it unfolds. This one is sort of back in the I guess we could put this under the category if we knew this one was coming with the acquisition of Star Wars by Disney, the parent company of ABC Television. Star Wars has had kind of an interesting relationship over the years with the question of live action TV. It's on the shelf, right? We had 50 hours of Star Wars television written under George Lucas's leadership. But now that the company has changed hands, what does that mean for the future of Star Wars in TV? Well, the ABC Entertainment president Channing Dungey was asked at the Television Critics Association's semi-annual press tour in Beverly Hills earlier this week whether she would like, did I say Beverly?
Beverly.
Oh, Channing. Beverly Hills, Channing Dungey. I'm having a middle-aged moment here. but she said, she says, oh, as a fan, I would love to say yes. The conversations with Lucas, we have had conversations with them and we'll continue to have conversations with them. I think it'd be wonderful if we could find a way to extend that brand into our programming. This was on a panel when they asked about the future of Star Wars on TV. Then afterwards, she said, it's all a little bit hush-hush. The company exists under a big shroud of secrecy. If you feel Marvel secretive, Lucasfilm takes it to a whole other level. Talks are ongoing. We don't have an official timeline yet. So, again, probably not a big surprise. I think we all know that this is something that's going to happen. Though, you know, guys, just, you know, between the three of us, I'm sure no one else is listening here, I'd much rather see a project like this go to Netflix than ABC, the network TV. I just feel that it'd have a lot more flexibility. You feel that way also, Savannah?
Yeah, and I actually wanted to mention they hired a new writer for whatever this show may be. Her name is Jen Muro, and she writes several shows for Netflix. So maybe that's a possibility.
Hold on now. I have to say this about about what Savannah just said about Jen Muro. She has been hired to work on the next project coming from Lucasfilm Animation, specifically. There is absolutely no pre-production going on with a live-action Star Wars TV show. There has been nothing green-lit at this point, and there have been no hirings. Jen Muro has been hired to work on a new animation project. I believe it's a TV series for Lucasfilm. We have to...
But we don't know if it's Star Wars.
She's a writer. She's a writer. Well, we have to assume it's Star Wars if it's coming from Lucasfilm. It could be the successor to Star Wars Rebels. Mm-hmm. I don't know what sort of... Now, if Jen is actually taking on a larger role than just being a writer, if she's maybe moving into the producer category, or maybe she will, you know, be the showrunner for this show. Like Dave Filoni runs Star Wars Rebels, maybe she'll take the wheel here. Well, it would be, but where does Dave Filoni go? So that's the thing. Maybe Dave will elevate himself up into motion pictures and actually work on Star Wars films. We know Dave was spending some time on the set of Star Wars Episode 8, according to Rian Johnson. And so I think that sort of progression might be logical for Filoni's career. Now, as far as I know, though, Jen Muro, she's a writer. Primarily. I don't know if she has any other sort of executive background, but she very well could. So maybe she's being brought in to head the next thing coming from Lucas Animation. But right now, nobody's been hired for this live action show. They're in talks. Yes, they've been in talks probably for a long time. The big thing about live action Star Wars TV is how to do it and maintain the standards of Star Wars. You need to have production value. You need to have spectacle. And that is the thing that has pulled back the reins on George Lucas's attempt to make a live action Star Wars TV show happen. I mean, when you think about it, let's go through
the audio history of Star Wars live action television. It all began 2005, Star Wars Celebration 3 in Indianapolis, celebrating the release of Revenge of the Sith. And George Lucas made an appearance there. He did a number of panels. I think he did three sessions. And during one of those sessions, he did reveal to the audience in his very droll and casual way, without any big fanfare, without any, you know, confetti falling from the ceiling or anything, but he did reveal that, true, he was done making Star Wars films, but he was looking toward television. And he made the announcement that a live action Star Wars TV show was on the horizon.
Well, we've been talking about Star Wars TV series. We're working on one right now, which is Clone Wars, which has been on the air, and we're going to try to expand that into a half an hour of 3D animation. And then we're also working on a live-action series, a spin-off, not with the main characters, but with other characters from the Star Wars universe. That will be trying to put that together in the next year, and then we have to write a year's worth of scripts so we can do it the way we did Young Indiana Jones.
Yeah. All right. It's almost muted the response from the audience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
so much different from, you know, Star Wars Celebration Now, where you have DJ Elliott and Mark Daniels jumping up and down, you know, getting everyone pumped up, and everyone acts like it's a rock show. I mean, this was still very much, you know, it was just a much mellower scene in those days of Star Wars Celebration. You know, conventions in general were a little more, because, I mean, now when you look at things like San Diego Comic-Con, forget about it. But so that's where George made the actual announcement. And I think that the crowd might have also been like, did he just say there's going to be a Star Wars TV show? Is that what he's saying? It was almost like they were shocked. But Rick McCallum was working on it. He was going to be the executive producer of it, or the producer of it. And while they were developing it, and George was having meetings, he hired writers. He hired a showrunner in Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica. And they were working on a concept which some people liken to Deadwood in space. Remember that show, Deadwood?
Oh, yeah. George was a huge fan of that.
So so that's what the marching orders were. And Rick McCallum spoke to IGN about this during that time when the show was going through pre-production. And he gave a little bit of details about the show and the working title. This is kind of hard audio to hear, so listen closely.
They take place between episode 3 and episode 4, that 20-year period when Luke is growing up. Okay. It's not about Luke, but it's about that period of when, you know, the Empire is really trying to take things. It's called Underworld. So it's the
it's
world.
It's called Underworld?
Well, that's a working title. Okay. But basically, it's underneath what's going on.
Okay.
And it's the criminals and the guys, the gangs that are, you know, running, you know, like Wall Street, you know, basically running the United States. You know?
Bernie Madoff.
Exactly.
All right. That sounds compelling. It's just like Wall Street.
Yeah.
You know, Bernie Madoff. I don't get it. Shame that didn't come to fruition. But yeah, Rick McCallum, I remember that. I remember the days where that was, you know, we were living and dying by these random appearances by Rick McCallum. He would pop up and give us these updates about this series.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't end there.
No, I believe they were targeting, my gosh, it could have been 2009 for the year that they were actually going to get the show off the ground. And then I started hearing from people later in that decade that it was going to definitely be on TV by 2011. And so I thought, wow, that's crazy. But in 2010, Jason, you and me sat down with Steve Sansweet and we asked him for an update about it. And he looked at us like, that's not going to happen, is it? The live action? I don't think that's going to happen. And we were wondering, well, geez, is that really the case? Have they pulled the plug on it? And George Lucas, sure enough, it was when they opened up the revamped Star Tours. George was doing a few interviews that day with Bob Iger sitting at his side, oddly enough, and spoke to G4. The late lamented G4. Is that still on the air, G4? Is that still a thing? Does anybody
No, G4 is gone. I don't know what it is now.
I remember when it was Tech TV, and then it became G4, and that channel is responsible for unleashing Olivia Munn on the world. Thank you. Thank you very much. But George Lucas revealed to G4 that the live-action show had reached some budgetary problems. They couldn't figure out a way to get this thing made and create something that matched the standards of the Star Wars cinema franchise. So they decided to, this is George's famous quote right here. Go ahead, hit the tape.
It sits on the shelf. We have 50 hours, we're just waiting to figure out a different way of making movies, a different technology that we can use that will make it so that it's economically feasible to shoot the show. Right now, it looks like the Star Wars features, but we have to figure out a way of making it for about a tenth the cost of the features because it's television. And we're working toward that, and we're continuing to work toward that, and we will get there at some point, but it's just a very, very difficult process. And obviously, when we do sort of figure this problem out, it will dramatically affect a lot of movies, because a lot of the movies' features now that are costing, $150, $200 million will suddenly be able to make them for $50 or $60 million.
So their budget, they can't figure out a way to. So that's the thing, as I listen to these clips and we sort of relive the history of live action Star Wars TV, I have to think that Disney is facing the exact same issues. I mean, what has changed really? Is it capable? Are they capable of taking these scripts specifically? We don't know if Disney's even considering, or ABC, even considering creating a Star Wars show based on the scripts that were already created for the live-action show. They could go in an entirely different direction, like, Star Wars Agents of Endor or some kind of crazy
stuff.
Well, sure.
Like you're absolutely right. I was just going to say that, they can control how expensive this is by where they set it. But the other thing is, too, and believe me, I am a huge, huge fan of Star Wars Rebels, right? I mean, I love what they're doing with that series. But George's standards, when you look at the animation of the Clone Wars, George has incredibly high standards, probably higher than what's reasonable given the budget constraints of any big production company. So I don't know that Rebels is necessarily holding the same standard levels of animation that the Clone Wars did. So I think Disney is probably willing to compromise a little bit more than George was.
Perhaps. We keep saying Disney and everything. I mean, I don't think there's any question once a Star Wars live action TV show gets off the ground that it's going to be Lucasfilm calling the shots for it. So I just wanted to make that distinction. Because it gets confusing with the sale and it's whatever. I'm still trying to come to terms with that. That was 2012, and I'm still trying to figure it out. But Ronald D. Moore, as I mentioned, from Battlestar Galactic, he was selected to be the guy to head this live-action TV project for George Lucas. And he spoke after the fact, after it was revealed that it was on the shelf, that he revealed that he did work on the live-action Star Wars TV show and talked a little bit about what it was like working with George Lucas.
I did, for a time, work on what was going to be a Star Wars live-action series. We would go gather at Skywalker Ranch periodically every couple of months and break stories and write scripts for this proposed series that George was interested in. George was in the room with us every day, and it was a fascinating, amazing experience to sit there with George Lucas and be, arguing stories. And there was a point where I found myself in an intense argument with George about what Darth Vader would or would not do. And this part of my brain kind of went, what the hell are you doing? It's like, you're really going to argue with George about what Darth Vader would do?
Who won that argument?
George gets to win all his arguments.
So, he's the maker, of course. But interesting revelation there that Darth Vader, despite George's earlier claim of, it's not about the main characters, but here we are talking about Darth Vader. And since then, there were some stories leaked that, clearly indicate that Darth Vader was a significant character in the series.
Yeah, well, there's more. Because, obviously, Ronald D. Moore says, talk about what Darth Vader does, so we're going to see him. George was saying that we would know the presence of the characters. Like, other characters would talk about them, but we would never actually see them on screen. Typical George Lucas smokescreen going on there. But, yeah, Darth Vader was going to be present in a live-action TV show. And another writer, a guy named Steven Skaya, went even further and spoke about the shelved live-action show and what could have been and what characters could have been a part of it.
The way the show was going to work was it was going to take place between episodes 3 and 4. It was going to tell the story of a different part of the Star Wars universe that you didn't exactly know, and then it was going to slowly fold back into the characters that you knew and loved. There's no greater thrill than re-breaking inside the canon of Star Wars stories that you've always wanted to tell. We told the story of how Han met Chewie and how Lando lost the Millennium Falcon. I even got to pitch a Boba Fett action scene with his rocket pack. And there's no better feeling than as a storyteller to have the guy who created all these characters look at you and give you a thumbs up and say, it's pretty good. I like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, pretty good.
So
keep it. Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, George making that claim in at Celebration 3 about, you know, we had a little meme here about, you know, what are we going to get? We're going to get the adventures of Weequay the janitor. What are we looking at here with this? You know, none of the, because he, anytime the conversation would shift to any major characters, no, it's going to be about, you know, people, you never saw him before. I thought, well, how fun can that be? But it sounds to me like this certainly evolved into being a pretty significant introduction of some major players in the Star Wars universe. What might have been?
What might have been, Jason? What might have been?
I can't believe it's over. I could go for another couple hours on this stuff. There's still lots of stuff here to talk about. We didn't get to all of it, but that's why you have to tune in each and every week here on Rebel Force Radio. Big thanks to our special guest, Savannah Kiefer. Savannah.
Thank you so much.
Want to have you back. Go to dorkydiva.com. Keep up with everything going on with Savannah. And you're one of our favorites. And I think you've been with us for some time. So
many years.
Great to finally have you on the program. So thank you very much. Also, our sponsors this week, Little Debbie Snack Cakes and Tops in the Star Wars Card Trader app. Lots of ways you can support us here at Rebel Force Radio. In addition to supporting our sponsors, you can support us directly by becoming a patron of Rebel Force Radio, and you can help us expand our coverage and unlock some bonus programming. Get our programming off the shelf by visiting patreon.com/RFR. Contribute today. We so appreciate that. You can email us, show@rebelforceradio.com, or leave us a voicemail, 708-320-1737. That's 708-320-1RFR. Follow us on Twitter at Rebel Force Radio, at Jimmy Mac Radio, at Jason Swank. By the way, I'm thinking of changing my Twitter handle to Jason Swank Radio. I don't know.
What about J-Zone?
J-Zone. Or J-Zone.
Really?
The Facebook page, the official Facebook page, we got breaking news, like things like the Rogue One trailer. I'll tell you what, I know. You got to refresh all these sites, but you know what? Just make sure that you're on Rebel Force Radio's Facebook page and we'll have that stuff to you. Toot sweet. Breaking news, links to stories, and great conversation there. And also the Rebel Force Radio Facebook group. We'd love to have you talking about the wars over there at the official Facebook group. The website, rebelforceradio.com, and iTunes, still one of the best repositories of all things and everything podcast. Rebel Force Radio, we're there. You can subscribe and review to make sure you get each and every episode each and every week. We'd love to have those reviews. Just one rule.
Make them good.
And you can stream us at WGNplus.com. We're available on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and SRSounds.com, Sorcerer Radio. You can find us streaming there on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. We're an official friend of Wookiepedia, the ultimate online Star Wars encyclopedia, Wookiepedia.com. as well as at JediNews.co.uk, Yodasnews.com, and the official Star Wars website, StarWars.com. I don't think there's a link for us on DorkyDiva.com, but I'm sure that'll change soon, right?
Yes.
We'll see you all next time here at Rebel Force Radio. Love you so much. For Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.